Off the Ball Breakfast.
GAA players are in amazing shape. Their fitness is incredible. They look professional in every aspect of it, but amazingly, like, these people still have jobs.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate, or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.
Right, we will be back to Talca Park in around 20 minutes' time for kickoff between Shelburne and Linfields. In the meantime, Kathleen McNamee has joined us in studio. Evening, Kathleen.
Good evening.
And Cameron Hill is here to bring us the News Round. Hello, Cameron.
Good evening, Owen. Breakfast Originals here.
There you go. The less moody than working at 6 a.m. in the morning crew is the slightly more wordy title. You are starting with the Irish clubs in Europe, Cameron.
Yes, indeed. And Shelburne manager Joey O'Brien says familiarity with Linfield won't count for much in tonight's Conference League playoff round meeting at Talca Park. The first leg is at Talca, with the second leg in Belfast next week, where the reward is more than €3 million for reaching the league phase. Now, as you heard from Nathan in the team news, Sean Boyd, who was past fit earlier in the week, has not made the matchday squad tonight. O'Brien is expecting a tight affair this evening.
I suppose the start of the game's again, but that's always that, I suppose, a little bit of feeling out of each other again. Yeah, even though you are familiar with them, but they are with us. But so again, it's going to be, we want to try to attack the game, start at a real high tempo and get on the front foot and try and impose ourselves in the game. I'm sure they have their own game plan and stuff like that, you know. So it's going to be a tight game. It's going to be tough. There wasn't a lot in it in both games. I suppose that when you look back at it, the scoreline, obviously they're like getting sent off up there, I suppose, stuff like that. So it's a tight game over the previous two legs, and I think it'll be very similar.
From 8 o'clock then, in the Azores, Shamrock Rovers are away to Portuguese side Santa Clara. Conor Malley missing the game for the Hoops, while Jack Byrne is again not part of the matchday squad. 120 Rovers fans have made the 2,000-kilometre trip to the Azores for that game, and manager Stephen Bradley says it was great to have them travel with the team.
Yeah, look, the playing journey off was great. It was brilliant to have the fans on the plane with us. You know, it was really nice to have that mix. It's great that so many of them have came here, because other than the charter, I don't think we would have got too many here, considering how difficult it is to get here. So, look, like I always say to the players, we know what this club means to them, and we'll do our very best to go out there and perform and make them proud of us tomorrow night.
Elsewhere this evening then, in Conference League action, you've AZ Alkmaar and Republic of Ireland international Troy Parrott in action away to Levski Sofia, where it's nil all with around 20 minutes gone in that game. And Jamie McGrath is on the bench for Hibernian, who welcome Legia Warsaw to Easter Road from 8 o'clock.
Now then, in news of transfers, we can tell you that Eberechi Eze is not starting or on the bench for Crystal Palace against Fredrikstad tonight. Why is that, Cameron?
Well, the FA Cup winners are facing Fredrikstad in the Conference League. Eze, meanwhile, close to finalising a move to Arsenal. A total fee of €78 million is understood to have been agreed between the two parties, with the Gunners set to beat Tottenham in the race to sign the 27-year-old.
This is a very dramatic evening, yesterday evening, when it first emerged that Arsenal might be interested in him. Apparently, behind the scenes, it wasn't as dramatic as that. Arsenal had been on good terms with Eze for the last couple of weeks, and maybe Eze himself had kind of given up on this over the past couple of days, but certainly there was interest in the player from early this month, and contact between Arsenal and Crystal Palace from early this month. It wasn't quite Arsenal entered a chat yesterday evening when Kai Havertz is rumoured to have suffered a bit of an injury, but the drama was pretty good.
It was pretty dramatic though, because he'd agreed personal terms and everything with Tottenham. Like, Crystal Palace had agreed all their terms. Like, the deal was basically all but done except on paper. And I know it sounds dramatic to say this now, but it felt like an early season win that Arsenal don't often get. Like, how long has it been since Arsenal have swooped in and gathered someone in such a fashion in that last minute sort of way? It doesn't happen all that often for them. So
no,
does that like show the attractiveness of Arsenal as a prospect now? No, obviously Arsenal Spurs.
Yeah, I saw somebody refer to it as the Sol Campbell moment of the TikTok generation. But not quite on that level of controversy, I suspect. But certainly kind of felt that you could just pencil in Eze into the Tottenham team. There was certainly a lot of people who had kind of like assumed that this was a done deal. And maybe it would have been if Spurs had maybe gone over the top and maybe offered a couple of extra million last week or whatever the case may be. But we know that that's not how Tottenham operate. And look, I don't know, is this going to spark a new wave of distaste towards Daniel Levy and the Tottenham hierarchy from their standpoint, or will they be very forgiving about it and will they think to themselves, well, listen, he tried to get every penny that he possibly could out of this deal in terms of not going too far with the offer?
I feel like from fans today, I've seen more, like from Spurs fans, I've seen more anger towards it being Arsenal, the club that came in, you know, North London rivals, taking him away. I saw reports, don't know how absolutely verified they are, in case it is an AI generated thing, that there's already been a mural of him put up by the Emirates.
I did see that. I fell for that hook, line and sinker. I presume it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything.
Is it beside the silhouette of the Premier League trophy?
Yeah.
Well, there was also another image doing the rounds. It was a statue of Kai Havertz outside the Emirates on a pair of crutches. So
okay, right.
I think that's what kind of put a slight bit of doubt in my mind. But I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it doesn't take long for these murals to go up whenever good news comes towards the club.
Your time in London, are Tottenham and Arsenal on the Northern Line? Like, do you get off along the Northern Line on the tube for
you
both?
Have to go a lot further to get to Spurs.
They're not on a tube line.
Yeah.
Oh, that's disappointing.
They're on a train line.
I was hoping that there'd be like a party at whatever station, like they were waiting for Eze to step off and say, hey, didn't see you there on the platform. What happened? And no response, just completely gone to ground. That would have been fun in terms of heightening the drama, but I guess not.
Yeah. If the Tottenham aspect wasn't involved here, this wouldn't have got as much noise, much attention last night. It is the drama of it all. Maybe not quite Arsenal getting interested yesterday, but it's still, as you say, very dramatic. In isolation, is this an amazing signing? Like, it's an amazing transfer moment for Arsenal fans. Is it an amazing signing, or is it actually something that just ratchets up the pressure even further on the squad, where now there are no further excuses? Arsenal have to win one of the two big trophies this season, otherwise this squad is close to a failure.
100% ratchets up the pressure even more. I think that the fact that Arteta has finally paid some attention to what he wants his general goal scoring to look like in the team means that it's going to have to ratchet up the pressure a little bit. I'm kind of interested to see how he plays them in the team and if it puts a little bit of pressure on Odegaard. Because obviously, he's not necessarily a traditionalist in the sense of the position that he can play. You know, he does have a multitude of options of where he can be put in that squad. Obviously, we had Gokhez at the weekend, who wasn't that convincing as of yet. But like, anyone that asked me about that, I said, I'm not going to pass judgment on a one game factor. I think everyone generally needs, unless you're an absolute super, 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 superstar, you need some time to get adjusted into the Premier League, and incorrect, especially with that Arsenal team and the way they're set up
you
at the moment.
Make sweeping conclusions based on one round of football.
I've seen some suggestion that he is going to be up against Odegaard, but he has played plenty on the left-hand side, which is just like, it may not be, if you're building a team around Eze, you would play him in the 10, but Arsenal are not building a team around Eze. Eze is coming in to fit a certain profile of player for Arsenal, and their need is greatest out left with that sort of player. So I just think it's pretty clear cut. He's potentially going to get his way to the top of the queue out left, ahead of Martinelli, ahead of Trossard. And if Odegaard picks up an injury, you have a ready-made 10
there. You
have
an option there.
I don't see them as being in competition with one another whatsoever, but I could be wrong. It'll be interesting to see how it actually plays out.
If I was to set up the team tomorrow, I definitely would play him on the left and have that as the very obvious position for him to mature into over the next like couple of weeks and months and take total and complete ownership of it. I think just with Odegaard's injury profile over the last while, that's probably one of the things that put a little bit of a question mark in my head. Like, I know how essential he has been to Arsenal whenever he's been fully fit and roaring to go. It's just, can he maintain that for the full season? And then if there is an opportunity for Eze to come in there and, I suppose, be the consistent player, what will that look like in 6 months' time or 9 months' time, whatever it is?
Yeah, and Odegaard's form wasn't exactly scintillating since he's come back from the injury last year. I certainly didn't have the consistency of 2-3 seasons ago.
The John Giles era with Off the Ball has come to an emotional end.
Off the Ball wouldn't exist the way it does without the existence of John Giles.
Helped by a plethora of John's friends and family within and without football, we pay tribute to the great man in front of a selected audience.
So we are here tonight to celebrate not just the impact John has had on Off the Ball over the last 20 years or so, but really the unrivaled impact that he's had on Irish football going back 70 years.
This week in the OTB football feed, look out for the full John Giles tribute night.
If we didn't say John was the best player I've ever played with, he would tell you why he was.
Eddie, I might come to that in a minute. Yeah. Yeah.
We speak to John himself about his 7 decades in football, former Leeds teammates Eddie Gray and Joe Jordan, plus tributes from Liam Brady, Brian Kerr and many more.
As you say, it's what, 20 odd?
23 years.
20 years. Well, they did well to put up with me for 20 years.
Released in 3 parts, we'll drop the first part of the John Giles tribute night on Tuesday morning, and to mark the occasion, it will be available for free for a limited time only. The John Giles tribute, only available in your OTB football feed.
Where do you want to take us next, Cameron? I think you've got some more football transfer news.
Yes, indeed. Leeds completing that signing of forward Noah Okafor from AC Milan in a deal worth up to €20 million today. The Swiss international signing a 4-year contract at Elland Road. Big day for John Short after yesterday, Owen. So he's through to the 50 metres backstroke final at the World Aquatics Junior Swimming Championships a day after claiming the gold in the 100 metres. The Galway teenager qualified 7th fastest across the 2 semi-finals in Romania today. He'll be back in the pool for the medal race tomorrow evening, the same day he gets his leaving cert results.
Okay,
so a big day and a big week for John Short.
Absolutely. Now onto the golf.
Yeah, the FedEx Cup reaches its climax this week with the season-ending Tour Championship getting underway today in Atlanta. So Rory McIlroy is alongside Scottie Scheffler for the opening 2 rounds today. They are both on level par early after 2 holes there. In fact, Scottie Scheffler has moved up to 1 under par. Shane Lowry also on course today. He is even through 12 holes of his opening round. Conor Purcell, meanwhile, it's finished 1 over for the day following his opening round at the British Masters. The Dubliner got a bogey on 18 to card 73 and sit 6 shots off the lead at the Belfry. That's held by Thomas Aiken, Matthias Schwab and Li Hao Tong on 6 under.
Leona Maguire's in action later.
She is. She's in the Canadian Masters today.
Yeah. Okay. We will move on to the rugby.
Yeah. So in the Southern Hemisphere, Wallabies legend Will Genya saying the time is right on Off the Ball Breakfast today to call time on his playing career. The 37-year-old hanging up his boots after nearly 2 decades. He last played in Japan with the Kintetsu Liners and is taking up a coaching role with the Japanese club alongside fellow ex-Wallaby and his former halfback partner Quade Cooper. With 110 test caps to his name, he's the 7th in all-time appearances for Australia right now, and he joined Ger Gilroy and Cullen Buhig on this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast.
I mean, there's always a part of you as a player that thinks you can still play and maybe hanging on. But I think I knew around that time that it was kind of going to be it. And it's just more a case of just figuring out when to say it, when to put it out there. And to be honest, I didn't really want to say anything, but I'd had a conversation with a few people and they just said it was something worth, you know, being celebrated. And I don't mean to say that in like a self-righteous type of way, but just putting it out there to in a small way, celebrate some of the good things that I was able to do and the people that I was able to inspire along the way.
I've definitely Mandela affected Genia's career into like the early parts of the 2000s, where he was like almost into the 2003 World Cup team. And with the fact that you said he was still playing there, I'm like, is there a different Will Genia here? Like,
Scrum half, he just confused George Regan, and that's what happened.
Exactly. There. It's like, no, actually, we've got a far less impressive Will Genia on the show this morning, but no, it was the Will Genia, only hanging up his boots now. That is news to me. I must say, I must start watching more Japanese rugby, I think it's fair to say.
Definitely. That interview's up on the OTV rugby feed. Great story about him meeting Ronan O'Gara for the first time. It's unbelievable. Any story that starts with Rugby 08 was a brilliant game, wasn't it, is, you know, a good one in my book. So definitely worth digging that out.
I must check that out. Onto the cricket and the tennis before we wrap up then, Cameron.
Yeah, the Irish women's cricketers have made it 2 wins from 2 at the T20 World Cup qualifiers in
Rotterdam today. So Gabby Lewis' side beating the Netherlands with the captain scoring 66 runs. Ireland restricted the Dutch to 137 runs for their 20 overs and chased down that total with four balls to spare. And former Wimbledon finalist Nick Kyrgios has withdrawn from the US Open. The Australian hasn't played a singles match since the Miami Open back in March. He also pulled out of the mixed doubles earlier this week. He did compete in the doubles in Washington last month, but said afterwards that his knee was, quote, cooked.
Have you guys been following the mixed doubles at the US Open?
It's so bad. Terrible. It's over now.
Okay, sorry. Had you been following it? close attention to this. Why was it so bad?
Just, it's such a joke that, like, basically it's been really controversial in the tennis world because they've essentially scrapped the old mixed doubles and brought in this kind of filled with stardust equivalent of the week before the tournament, which sort of waters down anybody's, like, anyone who's like Katerina Siniakova, who's a double specialist and has been playing her trade for years, to kind of parachute the likes of Alcaraz and
Emerald. Like, so you're putting better players into the competition. Well, does that not do the opposite of water? Does it not increase the concentrate?
But it doesn't. Anyone who's a seasoned mixed doubles player who's been playing their trade on the tour all year is suddenly just completely written off. You're not able to play at a Grand Slam. I think it's incredibly unfair. And they've made a huge song and dance about this one this year, which I think...
Haven't they like quadrupled the prize pot or something? It was like 200 grand and now it's a million or something along those lines.
Yeah, so incredibly lucrative for players who are already making the top books in the game anyway. It just, I don't know, felt a bit weird to me.
And what do you reckon the viewership figures are on this mixed doubles compared to the last mixed doubles or any other mixed doubles in the history of the US Open?
I'd say better, but that's not the point.
Life isn't fair is the bottom line of...
Cruel mistress.
I know, it is.
And its administration.
Like, I see your point. It's nice to have these mixed doubles specialists on the tour and showing up and all that. But I can see why people kind of want this. I clearly didn't watch any of this.
We'll have one or two wild cards. Have one or two that go in and sort of... like when they were meant to have Raducanu at Murray at Wimbledon last year. I'm fine with that. But dominating it with stars who definitely do not need to be there anyway, who are going to focus on the singles and generally pull out of these things because they're playing in the singles or getting further in, just doesn't really make sense.
Right. The news round has been with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action. Cameron, Kathleen, thank you very much. We'll take a quick break.
The news round on Off the Ball
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
This is News Talk.